The Diesel Podcast.
Developing innovation in English as a second or other language.
Episode 67. Should we stop allowing cell phones in the classroom?
Welcome to Diesel. This is episode 67. We are your hosts. I'm Brent Warner.
And I'm Ishelle Reyes. Happy end of your summer, Brent.
Thank you. We're wrapping up and kind of stepping. I'm done pool boying at this point, I guess. So thanks.
How's your tan?
Yeah, shout out. My tan's good, but shout out to Always Summer Pool Service down in Southern California for giving me a summer job. If you want the best in pool cleaning services, I am no longer working there, so good luck. How have things been going for you?
Well, as I mentioned before, I've made a shift into working with teachers. Well, I mean, managing teachers. So it's a short-term role, but I'm learning a lot and approaching teacher leadership from a different angle. So yeah. It's been good. It's been a learning experience.
It's definitely a learning experience. It shifts the approach to quite a few things. And so I hope it's been instructional for you, and we'll see what happens. You haven't made your final decision on whether you want to stick with it or go back to the classroom?
I think it's too early. There's just so much to learn and so many new ways of looking at the approach toward leadership. So yeah, no, I'm actually just enjoying this learning. It's like I'm an apprentice all over again. Yeah. So yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, here we are. We're kind of going back to school is the conversation. And actually, you know what? This language that I heard kind of recently is not back to school. I don't know if it was an advertisement or what, but I kind of liked it. It said forward to school, right? going forward to school. I'm like, yeah, that's a way better approach, because like back to school means like it feels like moving backwards, like, right? Yeah, like or it's like a drag.
We're moving back.
Like, yeah. If we said, hey, we're going forward to school, like it's like, hey, next steps, right? Moving, you know. Yeah.
And not all of us get summers off.
Oh yeah.
Well, some of us are like year-round schools.
Loser.
Our students don't have that gap.
No, for sure. Yeah, that's like this is my first time I've taken the summer off of teaching and since I can remember, and it's a privilege for sure for those of us who are getting that summer school. So so let's appreciate that. But yeah, today, so since we're talking about this idea of like forward to school, but also there was an interesting article that came up, and we're going to jump in and talk a little bit about this idea. We've discussed this many times. I think you and I have discussed it, and many teachers have discussed it, but this idea about cell phones in the classroom, and for a while it felt kind of settled amongst progressive teachers, I guess, but now I think the conversation has come back up. So let's jump over there and start having this conversation and see what happens.
So what got me thinking about this topic was an EdSurge opinion article last month, and that was Tyler Rablin's The Case for Making Classrooms Phone Free. Right. And so, of course, you and I embrace technology. We are pretty progressive, I would say. We'll try new things. I think you're even more adventurous than I am, but we are constantly looking for ways that we can improve the learning experience and then also the teaching experience. So of course, cell phones don't escape our conversation. And with the pandemic and a lot of the emergency online teaching, we saw the rise of just devices, right? Many of them teaching or learning from home on your cell phone. But now that we're mostly back to the classroom, there's a conversation of, hey, now phone usage has become too distracting in the classroom, and we're finding it difficult to self-regulate, or for students to self-regulate, and their information is just traveling at such a fast pace. So the article is really focusing on that. It's an instructor who had been very much pro phone use in the classroom as a tool, as an enhancement. But now this year, going back, he's actually flipping his policy, and he's going to have a no cell phones in the classroom policy. So that's where the conversation, that's where I became interested in this. And you had happened to also read that article.
Yeah, we both read the article. It's up on EdSurge. And so I thought it was a really interesting article, and it got me thinking. And at the same time, Ryan and Brian from Check This Out podcast also kind of talked about the same thing. Ryan's teaching summer school, and he had a strict, like, he's like, I'm just over it. No cell phone policy during the summer. And he was kind of talking about that on a semi-recent episode. And so I'm just seeing this kind of movement, right? And I am... Part of the conversation, as you mentioned, was like this shift back to the classroom. And I want to be careful about that language, too, because I think there's a much bigger chunk of people who are kind of permanently online, or class number of classes that are going to be permanently online.
Blended,
different types of things. And so I want to be a little careful around that, hey, it's only this situation. I think we're just kind of generally talking about it. But one thing that kind of stands out to me, because I was also talking with some other teachers this weekend, was the idea that so many students, they were, for example, at home for two and a half years. And then when they went back to the classroom, the students themselves recognized that they were not well socialized to other people. Right. So when when they're only on Zoom, for example, and then they're going back to the classroom, they don't really, they lost a lot of that interaction. So one of the teachers I was talking about, they're like, my kid was, in 10th grade when this happened. And now they're only coming back as kind of as a senior. And they're saying, like, there's all sorts of behavior problems, and not because the kids are bad, but just because they haven't socialized, or they haven't been
or socialized in the way that we are used to having them socialized. Yeah, right.
Like, they haven't gone through that, through socialization of like being together with other people and knowing what considered appropriate behavior or whatever. And maybe those things will change. I just thought it's kind of an interesting lens to approach this conversation with, because I think as we talk about like, hey, should phones be in the classroom or should they not? We're also going to be looking at like, we had this massive weird disruption with COVID of all of these parts that are like, well, it's not just about the technology and how we understand technology. It's about how we as people interact and the human side of that, and what works and what doesn't work, and what bad habits we might have slipped into and what ones we can get out of. And I think it even mentions this inside of the article, is that before COVID, there was an easy conversation because the way the apps were designed have changed over time. So it's like, so they were less, they were still demanding, but they were less demanding of your attention, and they're better designed now than ever before to get those dopamine hits going, and like, someone's texting me. Oh, someone's liking my post. Oh, someone, whatever it is. And so those types of things that were like over tapping that dopamine gland, right? And so I think that that's also part of this conversation that we'll have to learn how to adjust with and deal with as we move forward in the future. But I did think this article was really interesting. So this teacher, Rablin, basically, as you said, he went into a few different things. He talked, he pulled out like Kelly McGonigal and James Clear, who are some good thought leaders, about like their ideas about whether or not we're using willpower, what's going to be for students. And then Ishel, you and I will get into this, but also the conversation around like, what are different generations of teachers going to be thinking in response to how they want their students to go. So in the pre-show, you were mentioning, well, once these, zillennial teachers start coming in and they already grew up their entire life with phones in their hands, they'll have a different approach to it than maybe you and me are like, okay, when, having a cell phone solid in your hand, 20s or 30s, depending,
If you were born your entire life having that device, we'll talk about it. But I think that it's spot on. We're dealing with a psychological shift in our behavior. And I think that the pandemic sort of rushed some of it. And we're seeing the effects of that as we, as many of us have to deal with them in the class, or the word I'm using is deal with, mm-hmm. because that is considered problematic now, since I'm used to pre-pandemic behavior, right? And then these students coming in after 2 years of being exposed to the to constantly using their mobile device, now it's sudden that behavior is suddenly considered not okay or not appropriate. Well, that's something that's slowly going to, I guess, also change back, perhaps. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So I thought we might jump into a little bit of the research, just some of the things. Mm-hmm. And we also, I feel like we're going to be premising everything right now, because all of the research is like pre-pandemic. And like, yeah, well, I mean, let's discuss that briefly before. So what do you think, like, what are your thoughts when you look at research now that is pre-pandemic?
It's either, for me, it's like, it fits into my pre-pandemic kind of thinking, where I was, you know, championing the use of cell phone in the classroom because, you know, it's a tool and it's a wonderful way to get students engaged and then also to innovate and to get them, you know, ready for the world that they're, that uses a lot of technology. And I don't know if that's the same with you.
I have mixed feelings. Like, I'm not totally sure. Mm-hmm. I really liked what a lot of what Rablin said in his mm-hmm. in his article, and that started from a series of tweets. But mm-hmm. I also like the idea of recognizing that students will always have a phone available to them from here on out in the future. And you and I as professionals, you know, we're also guilty of pulling out the phone when someone is talking or presenting or, you know, checking. And that doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad thing. Maybe we're doing it to mm-hmm. share an idea or to take a note or to, you know, because it brings up an idea of something that we want to check on mm-hmm. later, right? On the other hand, it could just be I'm a little bored and I want to check, you know, my social media stream or whatever else it is. And so I think all of us, I mean, there's very few people out there who can kind of honestly say that they're perfectly good about not checking their phone when they're supposed to be focused on one other task. But we can also train ourselves to be, you know, better behaved about it. And, you know, we have to kind of balance all of these parts, right?
Brent, I always like to point out that we teach adults. And mm-hmm. so the approach also has to take that into consideration. Many of the articles that we, or the actually the article, the Rablin article, I believe he's a high school teacher,
yeah,
perhaps.
Like ninth graders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's K-12. So a lot of the articles I've read in the past mainly deal with K-12 scenarios. And you and I are, and many of our listeners are teaching adults where the classes might be quite small mm-hmm. or quite large as well. So I just wanted to point that out as well as we're going through these research articles.
Yes, considerations all to be kept in mind. So
yeah.
So one of the first research one of the first articles I found with research on it was from Jones, Arguet, and Gretlin from 2020. So kind of just as pandemic was mm-hmm. hitting, and it was called "Cell Phone Use Policies in the College Classroom, Do They Work?" And so what they did is they went and kind of looked at these ideas of like, hey, when classes have policies on cell phones, what effects do they actually have on the student? Now, I was reading this article and there's some parts where it's like, wait a second, you say that you're saying this, but then your results kind of say that. So there are a few different, you know, inconsistencies, I thought, inside of this article, or I might have to read a little bit more closely, but there were a few interesting points. So I thought that this was worth considering. So the first one is that they said that restrictive and non-restrictive policies end up with the same amount of usage. So like if you have a policy in your class that says, hey, you're not allowed to use cell phones, versus if you have a, you know, like an open policy, just like, you know, do what you want to do, students are basically likely to use their phones the same amount, right? And so, Ishel, what does that say to you if you're going, those policies are the same?
Well, obviously that they don't work. The approach doesn't work. And we're not looking to what the problem really is and how to curb it. If they're working the same amount of time, then we're not modifying behavior. And perhaps there's something there about the information we're giving to students. Maybe there's no perceived value, because I can tell you right now, if I don't perceive value in the information being shared, I'm going to go to my phone, because then I'm not wasting my brain cells trying to understand and comprehend something that I see zero value in. And also, if I'm just bored by the information, then I'll go to whatever is going to distract me, so, and take energy away from listening to a speaker that's boring.
I also thought one thing that struck me is like, well, then that could potentially be a creator of stress that for students that didn't exist before, but they're going to choose that regardless. So, hey, yeah. I'm going to check my phone 7 times in an hour, right? If I know it's cool, then I'm just checking and whatever. And if I know that it's not cool, I'm still checking, but now I'm a little stressed
feeling
about
guilty.
It. I'm a little guilty. I'm a little anxious about it, you know, those types of things. So is that necessary? And then, like, environmentally speaking, then you're building a situation where students might feel anxious inside of the classroom because they're doing something that's, you know, quote unquote against the rules, but actually doesn't, you know, doesn't actually influence the behavior. So I thought that was an interesting thing.
I think, Brent, right, that's, I think my approach to cell phone use in the classroom has always been that by abiding to something that bans them or is an absolute, I'm just creating a hostile environment, because the good students who might occasionally glance at the phone, they're the ones that are going to feel really guilty. And as you're saying, they're going to feel, I'd be like, ooh, I hope the teacher doesn't think I'm not paying attention or being disrespectful. I'm just checking quickly because I finished early, but now I feel guilty. That's exactly it. That there is a sense of being on eggshells. And I think if you've ever observed a classroom that has that kind of unspoken, you can sense it. You feel like whatever you're going to do, you're breaking a rule or you're doing something wrong. And I think that with cell phones, I think there's a fine line there.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So a couple other things inside of here. Number one, quiz scores are roughly the same. So they did the research, they kind of had the people doing, and then they said, okay, let's quiz the people who had the restrictive policy, the ones that didn't, and they showed that quiz scores are roughly the same. Now, of course, that would, you know, if, considering the previous idea that, like, hey, they're still checking the same amount, this is not the same thing as saying, hey, this is a strict no cell phone thing. So, like, you have to turn in your phone before you walk in the class, and you have to take, you know, like, you can pick it up on your way out, because this is where students are still, the policy is there in place, but they're still actually able to do what they want. But regardless, with this, it said, hey, quiz scores are roughly the same. And then I thought this last one was a little interesting too. So talking about anxiety from before, they did say that anxiety levels don't seem to correlate with usage. So I want to point that out. What that means is that they were saying, if they're anxious, they're not more likely to pick up their phone and start using it. So they're not using it because of anxiety reasons, right? I'm not
FOMO.
Saying, yeah. So they're using it because it's kind of part of their everyday life. So it's not like, oh, I'm nervous about it. It's like, oh, this is part of my, is a habit. You know, I mean, it's how we use it.
It's so ingrained in our life now. It's not going away. It really isn't going away.
We kind of talk about this idea. It's like, I just, every once in a while, it makes me laugh to, like, think of, like, oh, okay, like, what if we just decide there's no more cell phones for real in the world? Like, obviously everything would come to a grinding halt. So, okay. So then there was this other article, from Lancaster 2017. So again, pre-pandemic and, you know, those types of things. It's called Student Learning with Permissive and Restrictive Cell Phone Policies, a Classroom Experiment. And so this one was kind of interesting because they actually did some, a lot of the research was based on, about this information that, that studies out there have done are kind of self-reported by students, whereas this one was kind of like, let's actually take a look at some of the actual information on what we're finding out. And so they had a couple of outcomes, and one was student learning is not necessarily harmed by students' use of cellular phones in class. And they spent a lot of time talking about that, but that's really the end of the outcome, mm-hmm. right? Which is like, hey, at the end of the day, the research is showing that their learning is not really harmed by having access to this, whether or not they're doing like active learning stuff with their phone. So, hey, we're doing the quizzes and the Kahoot or whatever. Or if they're doing things like checking social media or texting with their friends, they're saying at the end of the day, it didn't really have a big thing harm their learning. And then the second one, Anishel, I thought you you had an interesting comment on this before about the favorability of instructors. You want to share that idea?
Was this that students who were in the restrictive environment tended to grade their instructors higher mm-hmm. on course evaluations?
Yeah.
And lower, you know, the students in the more permissive environment tended to rate their professors lower mm-hmm. in teacher evaluations, which is, I suppose, if your job is tied to teacher evaluations, that's, I don't know. I don't.
It's kind of counterintuitive, right? So you like.
Yeah, but well, for me, for me personally, I have never been rated. I've had both type of policies, mm-hmm. and I have never noted anything. I haven't been rated more critically. Yeah. I mean, all of my ratings have been favorable. So I just think it depends on how that approaches, what a punitive approach is or what a strict approach is, because yeah. that varies as well.
Well, and I think this is meant to be a collective thing. So like one teacher themselves would probably be rated higher or lower, but I think what they're saying is that collectively, if you're looking at all of these things, the teachers with the more restrictive policy are getting higher ratings. Now, there could be so many different possible mm-hmm. reasons for that. It's really hard to dig into.
Rating out of fear.
Yeah, well,
I don't know.
There's also this idea that students know, like, hey, I am being distracted by this thing, and so like that policy maybe is better for my learning, and if it's better for my learning, then maybe the teacher knows that like we need this, right? Possibly, right? That's a possible approach to it. And actually, I was telling you this too, Ishel, before in pre-show, my son did a research mm-hmm. project for his college course, business and marketing, and they were talking about mm-hmm. distractions in the classroom, and I thought it was one of the things. It was really interesting. This was for online. They're saying, like, what are you most distracted by? And the highest one for online was they're most distracted by phones. Mm-hmm. And then they said, you know, what are the reasons that you're distracted? And it said, well, the reason that we're distracted is because teachers are boring or the lesson is not engaging yeah. or whatever it is, right?
I concur.
Yeah. But there's also kind of a disconnect in there, because it's like, are you bored because you're being distracted by the more interesting phone? Or is it, you know, which one is the problem and which one is the result, right? It's kind of another point where you're looking at it and you're going, okay, there's so much for us to sort out here and kind of
right,
pull apart.
Because I think the ability to self-regulate can also go hand in hand with intrinsic motivation versus extrinsic motivation. And if that student or that learner does not have enough intrinsic motivation, then they may not, again, they may not see the value in dealing with the initial boredom of getting into a specific topic that the teacher is explaining, and then realizing that, oh, there's actually something valuable here. There's something that applies to me. And that could also be on the end of the teacher not explaining how that's immediately applicable to daily life. So if you're teaching math without teaching the student that how that relates to life, mm-hmm. then that student might then say, well, I'm not good at math. I'm bored with math. I'm going to, you know, doodle or look at my phone. And that's another area, I think, of consideration.
Yeah, yeah. So there are different parts to all of this. Again,
this is why the conversation is relevant.
Yeah,
right. And I don't think that in any of the articles that we read, there's a definitive answer or a template for how to approach this. But it's more of a conversation that I think will follow us along as long as we have mobile devices or whatever the next iteration of that is.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of the important part is like, are we keeping ourselves up on that conversation or did we make a decision 5 years ago and like, that's just the one we're sticking with right forever. And so I hope that we can all kind of keep ourselves flexible and go like, hey, in the past I was doing this, but these types of situations changed. And so now I'm trying this. And I always want to make sure that like, people feel that they have the permission to test the different ways, right? And it's like, oh, it shouldn't just be this, or it shouldn't only be that. And like, and if you're going to go with a, hey, let's try this semester in a no cell phone policy, cool. Can you at the same time try that two different ways with two of your classes and see and like actually measure the results, right? In fact, I would suggest going back to the interview with Mark Machino and talking about capturing and tracking that data for your own growth, right? Because how do you actually know if it's all anecdotal versus if you're actually collecting information and seeing what the differences are? That could be a really powerful way for you to make better choices rather than just like, I feel like this is the good thing, right? And with the research being, unclear, you could kind of continue processing that as well. So before we jump over to the discussion side and just kind of open conversation side of this, Seychelle, do you have any other research or anything that was standing out to you that that you wanted to mention?
No, why don't we just go ahead and jump into the conversation?
Sounds good. Okay, so just briefly, we're experimenting with different things. We did Clubhouse for a while and
TikTok.
TikTok. but we are trying, again, we're always just playing with different things. And so right now we applied to make a Twitter community and I imagine that'll get accepted and run. So I don't think it's been pushed through quite yet, but if you're listening to this later, hopefully within a few days, Diesel Pod community might be in there. So if you're interested in that, go take a look and join us there. And we might talk about doing spaces again or some of those open conversations again. I want to get back into that. It just kind of, I think we all just kind of slipped in certain ways and there are more things that we want to do with the show. But anyways, another thing for you to look at and check out and see if you're interested. So check out Twitter for our
Twitter community.
Fingers crossed Twitter community that they're going to accept us.
One day we'll get verified.
Yeah, we'll get it. You think we're going to get verified?
We have 67 episodes. Why can't we? Eventually.
Yeah, sure. We'll see how it works.
All right. So discussion time. So this topic, again, like I said earlier, we're often coming upon this topic because I tend to notice the instructors who are punitive in nature when it comes to this. And it takes me back to this article that I found on No Atom Blog. It's a blog article. It's from 2016. Again, pre-pandemic. The article is called Encouraging Grit, Warm, Demanding, Authoritative, but Not Authoritarian. And the article talks about having clear expectations and high expectations of students, but not at the cost of adding anxiety due to punishment or just a punitive environment. And so I often think about this because my nephews and nieces are growing in a world that will never know no cameras, no social media, no touch screens or wait time. They don't know what wait time is. And a lot of it, due to all the information that's coming at us. So what will their classroom look like when they're there? When, how will their teachers approach that? And I would not want my, or any child for that matter, not just the ones related to me, to have to sit in a classroom where they feel scared. Right. Or have so much fear of punishment or getting into trouble. And I do have a couple of nieces and nephews who are more on the sensitive side, and they just don't want to break rules. And so I constantly think about what approach we take and how that affects the classroom.
Yeah,
I don't know if you wanted to comment.
No, I think for sure, because we're getting to, you know, like we've mentioned this before, but like there are so many people that feel like their phones or their devices are part of their identity. Like this holds everything that's important to me. Right. And yeah, so
it does.
Yeah. So
it
like really having does. That taken away, it's almost unexplainable to someone, like to those of us who grew up without phones or grew up without, mm-hmm. you know, those things early on, we almost can't totally understand it in the same way that, you know, someone who's now in their 20s,
One of the things that I've noticed with I've been testing the beta, a cell phone beta, iOS mm-hmm. on the Apple device. And I noticed that your driver's license is now accepted as a digital, like official card on your phone in two states. I mm-hmm. believe it's two states. So you and I are used to the paper version, the little plastic card,
right.
or the insurance, car insurance for that matter, or any other credit card. But now, if you don't have a need for that and it's all on your phone, if someone's taking that away from you, well, it's like taking away your wallet, mm-hmm. what you and I would consider as your wallet. So there's a lot of personal, that's information that you normally wouldn't collect from someone.
Right. Right.
Yeah. And I think, Brent, I get passionate about this topic because I think that sometimes, teachers, me included, because I constantly have to do self-checks, the fact that we're using Google Docs or that we've adapted to the cloud or that we're using Kahoot or other apps to replace PowerPoint or Word, which were like the old versions of a tool, mm-hmm. that doesn't automatically mean that we have adapted to the way that behavior has changed due to technology. We're definitely not adapting fast enough, and we seem to be using the same lens to look through at the new world that these millennials are growing up in, and that it's just a different world, even though you and I, people call us techies, and yeah, but there's a new version of, there's a new, like the millennials, they're just used to a different world.
Yeah, I think that's right, and I think that's an important thing, because a lot of times, you know, we might pat ourselves on our back and go, we're so tech forward, but like, mm-hmm. you know, we understand a different aspect of technology than the current students do. And I think that's always true, but like, mm-hmm. whether it's technology or ways of viewing the world or whatever. And I think that often gets, you know, maybe brushed over. I don't know exactly how to describe mm-hmm. it, but yes, like, we want to do our best to kind of keep pushing the envelope and really get things that are going to help students with their skills moving forward. But also our interpretation of what is best in that can be very different from what the student's right. interpretation is. And so there are ways that as teachers, we might hold our students back for a long time because we're still holding on to our standards of the best practices from 20 years ago or 30 years ago.
Yeah, even 5 years ago because mm-hmm. of the pandemic. I think, Brent, it's I know at the core of most of us, we want the best possible learning environment for our students and, you know, maximize those opportunities with the tools that they're growing up with. But as you said, there may be times where we have to pause and really reflect on whether what approach we're using is effective or is it hindering or maybe not effective at all. Maybe it makes no difference, just like in the research.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. So I want to bring up one of these discussion questions or points, and I'd like for you to respond to it. So this was mm-hmm. back from the Jones, Arguet, and Gretlin article. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to read through this part of it, and I want you to just kind of tell me what you think about it. So it said, If punitive cell phone policies like ours are no better than the absence of a cell phone policy, the question remains whether there are any types of cell phone policies that are effective. And then it goes on to give a possibility. So it says the possibility is to create a policy based on positive reinforcement rather than punishment. There was a quasi-experiment implemented with a reward system for students who refrained from phone use during class. Students who handed in their phones at the beginning of class received one extra credit point towards their final grades, and they found that handing in their phones showed better test scores, attendance, and semester GPA. So again, this is handing it in, right? Not just the policy and how the room differences, but they said when those students did hand in their phones, they had a tendency to do better. And it says further research should investigate the topic of reinforcement-based cell phone policies. So what do you think about that?
So I have a because there's points involved here and extra credit, I maybe have a hard time conceptualizing that for myself. Mm-hmm. But I have approached this similarly. So I was overseas in Qatar, and I was finding that my 18 through 19, 20-year-old students were just having a hard time not just leaving the phone alone. Mm-hmm. So again, this is a fight that is a losing fight for me. And I'm not going to spend, I don't want to spend my energy with punitive remarks.
You could do or the Japanese way of throwing a piece of chalk at the students.
So then I found quickly, okay, they love playing, what's that game? Oh my gosh. What's that popular game with the pinata? Fortnite. Fortnite? Fortnite and a couple of other games. And they just loved playing as a group, and they would all, you know, during the break would play as a group. So one of the things I said is, okay, I see no problem with that. Why don't we, if you're not on your phone at all, and we have a table on the side, you just, you know, put your phone there, mm-hmm. At the beginning of class, we can have 5 extra minutes early for you to have more time to play. That did the trick. Mm. That did the trick. They even said, teacher, join us, play with us. I created an account. I think maybe I played once, but that did it.
So at and the beginning of class, before class started, you just did a game or something with them?
No, they had to wait because the game doesn't come first. They had to delay that gratification, mm-hmm. and remind themselves that the reward is coming. And it wasn't a taking away of your phone. I was not taking away. I was actually adding. Yeah. So because I was adding, it wasn't a punishment. It was a reward. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's maybe closely related to the concept here. Mm-hmm. I wasn't using points. But I was using more, they wanted more cell phone time. Fine, have your cell phone time, but let's make time for it, because during class they'd probably be checking to see who the next fighter up is, and if they already know that that's coming up at the end of class, then they could self-regulate a little bit better. And that was no problem. Yeah. No argument whatsoever. And it was resolved in a friendly manner, where I think now they said, our teacher is cool. That really was a concept, because I played with them.
Yeah.
But when the students perceive that when you have that trust, then they're more likely to do things that they're not a fan of. Like, for example, there were times when I said, all right, guys, we're going to have to go through this and we're not going to get a break. But they were more likely to complete that task because now we had developed a trust, that trusting bond.
Yeah, for sure. So
I wasn't out to get them. I wasn't out to catch them on their phone and then, shame them and shame them in front of their peers. So I think that's what.
Yeah, I like that. I think that makes sense. And it's really, ultimately, it's the same thing, but it's like just the approach to it, right? So it's like, mm-hmm. hey, I'm holding this game back from you, or no, I'm going to play it with you, like when mm-hmm. we get this thing done, right? And so I do like that approach. And I think that there's some interesting things for people to, you know, like just again, shifting the mindset again, like why does this have to be punitive? Why can't it be, you know, a supportive thing that can help them out? And can we shift our lens on that a little bit?
And Brent, I want to add to that this is not like a solution for every single instance, every single situation. And I think that might be a pitfall when we're looking for the answer to cure every single issue that we have with cell phones. Mm-hmm. I think that there's got to be a quick assessment on the end of the teacher of like, wait, where is this behavior coming from? And how can I quickly curb it in a way that maximizes learning time and doesn't take away and now shifts the attention to like punishment. And I think that that is just something that will happen every single time. I don't think we can get away from that, because if I were to apply what I applied in Qatar to another classroom, that may not work.
Right.
That may not be the issue at all. So I think that that's worth keeping in mind always when we're assessing what that policy looks like for that particular class at that moment.
Yeah. So we definitely want to keep that in mind, because it's very easy for us to generalize and go, this is what I'll do all the time. And that's just, now mm-hmm. I've got the answer. And it's like, why didn't it work this time? It's like,
yeah, well, absolutes are just not, absolutes aren't going to get you anywhere.
Yeah. So, okay. So now we've got kind of an opposite side of the conversation. So this is a little section of the post from Rablin, who stopped using the cell phones. And you know, one of the things one of the comments that I had made to you was like, okay, well, you know, maybe if the class is really engaging, then, you know, students aren't going to want to be on their cell phones as much, right? And you had kind of responded to that, but I'm going to read out kind of, he actually even kind of talked about that in the article here. So let me just get this section. So he says, when people make comments like, quote, we just need to make the curriculum more engaging, and then they won't even want to be on their phones, right? And so he says, to those people, I say, my lessons can't compete with the latest game that just came out. We work with students who increasingly crave immediate gratification. Putting this sole responsibility on teachers is unfair. We only have students for a limited amount of minutes each day. What about their time at home? Does more need to be done to raise awareness for families about how phones and social media are impacting children? And should schools step up to back teachers on this issue? Sure, but that's not our call to make. I can use my voice to raise awareness, but at the end of the day, what happens in my classroom is the only part that I can control. So what do you think about that idea of like, hey, it's beyond just the classroom, right? There's more to it.
I think, yeah. So I mentioned in the pre-show that this is something that, again, I think it's going to be a lifelong, well, I don't know, maybe for us, because we're closer to death. Hey. But
hey, what are you talking about?
Your birthday's coming up.
Birthday is coming up. Yeah.
Yeah. But what this means is that behavior shifts along with the environment that is presented before us, right? Mm-hmm. So given that technology is increasing, the speed of information is increasing, and so many things are changing at a speed that we didn't have 10 years ago, even 5 years ago, right? That's obviously going to also affect our behavior, and behavior is learned from the time we're born into our families. Mm-hmm. Much of it is going to have to be shaped or supported by those around us throughout our growth process. And I think that just as we teach children what is appropriate in the classroom, as they start kindergarten or they get prepared to join kindergarten, they have to go to preschool. I think that one of the other shifts that we're going to see is parents and maybe other places, other roles in the community also supporting, you know, what is appropriate behavior when it comes to cell phone usage. Mm-hmm. I don't think, yeah, I kind of agree that it shouldn't be the sole responsibility of the instructor. But I also think that if it's spread out over the learning years, preschool all the way through high school, then by the time they get to sixth grade, you won't have to talk about that.
Yeah.
Well. And then in college, we just sort of know. And then you could just shoot a glance at someone and they just, you know.
Yeah. I mean, that's ideal. I kind
of. This is like a big.
Yeah, same conversation again, which is like, mm-hmm. this is going to be, depends on different situations. So one, I'm actually really interested. So a couple episodes ago, we talked about the whiteboard rooms that I've built, and I'm going to be testing right. those out for the first time this semester. So when we have a more interactive class, when the whole class is designed to be more about interactive and working together, I'm wondering if the cell phone conversation will, you know, fade a bit or not. not necessarily disappear totally, but like there's way more for you guys to be doing during this time. So it's not so much a teacher led. And I think a lot of this conversation is still kind of like making the assumption that there's like a lecture based class as compared to, you know, an interactive or cooperative based class. And so I think that part of it is going to be, you know, one aspect. And then the other one, which I might have mentioned on the show once or twice, but this idea that I think in the future we really will be looking at teachers as like producers of content. So like YouTube, you know, like competing with YouTube type of things, right? This full experience, and where we have the teacher teaching, and we have maybe a classroom producer who's putting the stuff online and making it, you know, kind of glitzy and glammy and more entertaining at the same time. And so I think that there's going to be that conversation where it's like, hey, I can't compete with all this interesting stuff. And it's like, well, can't now, but you're going to learn how to, because this is what I think that this kind of edutainment type of thing, right? Like that, that, you know, like people get really they feel that that's cringy, I know, but at the same time I really think like, hey, why shouldn't learning be fun and engaging and, you know, make me feel happy and looking forward to the next class the same way I look forward to, you know, the next episode of the TV show coming out or whatever else that is, right?
So Brent, at the beginning you asked me about how my new supervising role is going, and one of the things that I noticed is whereas before in the classroom, I had I was teaching, I have breaks, right? Breaks where I can check my phone, breaks where I can get, you know, check my email, get back to people on my phone, like personal stuff. With this new role, I'm engaged all day long. The day goes by so fast. I don't have time to check my phone and I don't miss it. Pretty soon, like at lunchtime, I realized, oh my gosh, it's already lunch. Oh, let me check quickly what's on my phone. And I'll see that my nieces sent me a bunch of memes and I'll have time to respond hello from lunch. But the day went by so quickly and I wasn't bored. I was maybe at some points frustrated with problem solving, but I was engaged. So again, if the classroom activities or whatever classroom experience or maybe even the chunks of time and how they're divided up for whatever it is you're teaching, if that is creating students who are hands-on, engaged, talking to others, then there won't be time to be bored and go look and check your phone. Or you will do it quickly on your way to the restroom and then come back and know that you've got to get back to work, but not because of a fear of getting caught and being punished, but because you want to do all of that.
Yeah. And I think that building that engaging classroom is an intentional skill and practice that takes time, right? So it's like, I'm not going to be able to get an entire semester of perfectly awesome classes every single time, but I can start figuring out, okay, these things are what work, and this is how, like, this is what's influencing students to move in this direction, to put down the phone and actually start, like, listening. So pay attention to what are the times in your class when the students are putting the phones down on the desk, right? And their heads are coming up and they're looking and actually like, you know, what are those moments of engagement, and really pay attention to that and then start like leading towards those moments more often.
Right. If you've got a smaller class, then you're able to do so much more because you have more freedom to see what students are doing on their phones. Whereas if you have a class with 30 students, it might be a little bit harder, but then you can structure partner work or, you know, accountability groups, etc. There are ways. I don't think it's foolproof, and I think it's going to be something that we're constantly having to test out, improve, adjust, you know, constantly reshaping. I don't think there's going to be the one size fits all when it comes to this.
Okay. Well, even with that though, let's wrap up with answering the question. We'll do a 3-2-1 and we'll both answer at the same time. Should we stop allowing cell phones in the classroom? So yes or no. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
3-2-1
No.
Maybe. I can't believe you went with no.
Should we stop allowing them?
Yeah, stop allowing them.
No.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know if it's. I think that answer is going to shift based on the needs of the class, right?
You know why? Because everything's going to be on my watch, and I no longer have to check my phone. I can just glance at my watch. Then are we going to just ban watches? Oh, yes. Yeah. I know there's going to be like, take off your mobile device. No, I'm still a no. I'm a hard no. I'm a solid no. I'm change your approach to that. Change your approach. Mm. That's it. Nope. So you're toward banning.
Well, when you phrase it that way, geez.
We can't be friends now.
You're toward banning.
We just can't be. No, I'm not toward banning.
You said that I'm toward banning. Like, yeah, you are. Maybe. I think that we need to be a little bit more like options open to what the best needs of the situation are. So,
whereas
you're a hardliner. How dare you?
Yeah.
You're what we call in the world an extremist, Ishelle, whereas I'm just trying
I'm
to
a radical.
You're so radical.
Teacher. radical act of teaching.
All right. So everybody out there, what do you think? We'd be interested to hear your thoughts as well. Share with us on the show and the show notes. But let's jump over to Fun Finds.
All right. So it is time for our Fun Finds. And I have a book that I believe everyone in teaching should read. If you're working with groups, this is called Shifting the Monkey, The Art of Protecting Good People from Liars, Criers, and Other Slackers. Mm-hmm. This is by Todd Whitaker, and it talks a lot about management of, in this case, he's talking about company workers, and then, you know, the statistical number of workers who are going to be slackers or complainers or do less than what they're supposed to do, thereby shifting the responsibility upon the good workers or the ones that are reliable. But it teaches strategies on how to maximize the work and not punish the good people. I think this would be great even with family relationships and friendships. Mm-hmm. So it's a very easy read. It's got a little bit of humor in there. It's just a good tool to have in your toolkit.
Yeah, and when you first mentioned that, I thought it was like a manager's book or something. But Todd Whitaker is totally in education.
He's written. He's got all these books, and so I'm gonna be adding more after this one. But I was so excited when I started reading it. Just a new perspective on how to, it's a managing responsibilities, mm-hmm. Or the people who shy away from their responsibilities and find excuses, but that's everywhere.
Yeah.
So the strategies he offers are applicable in many areas.
Cool.
What do you have? What do you have?
So mine is a little unusual this time.
Is it an SPF lotion that you came upon during your pool day, boys?
No, I just have my Neutrogena lotion. That's fine. I wanted to do a summer hobby and kind of pick up some skill, and I didn't really get to it. But I'm doing it at the very end of the summer, and it's kind of starting. So I'm just interested in shorthand. I think it's a kind of a cool way to be able to take notes and to be able to write things down more mm-hmm. efficiently. And mm-hmm. so in the past, schools used to teach shorthand, but it didn't exist mm-hmm. basically kind of right around starting with my generation. They stopped using it because
my mom knows shorthand.
Does she? Yeah. So I wanted to learn. I'm like, I want to learn shorthand. And so I picked up the seminal manual on it, which is called the Greg Shorthand Manual, GREGG, and doing a little bit of research on it. The second edition is supposed to be the best one. I guess they went into like an other like premium editions that kind of messed things up and made it not quite as good, but it's really cool because it's like, you know, learning shorthand is like you can do a squiggle for it's not just a letter, right? It's like based mm-hmm. on sounds, and then like mm-hmm. and then they combine. So if it's like the sound goes before the vowel, then you might put it up on top of it, and then you can drop down into the squiggle circle for the A sound, and then the D. Anyways, it's I can't possibly explain it well in a minute or two here, but the idea then, once you start getting into it, is like these long words that might take you a while to write out or even type mm-hmm. out, you can just kind of do in this little squiggle with a really quick shorthand. And so I just want to learn this. I think it's an interesting way to be able to take notes. And it doesn't matter ultimately if it's on paper or if it's digital, right? Mm-hmm. Once you start learning how to do it, you're just about like taking these quicker handwritten notes. And so,
My mom called this, and I don't know if this is even a word in English. I'm just translating based on what I think it would be. It's in Spanish, it's taquigrafía, which is tachygraphy. Is that a word? Tachygraphy.
Yeah, like graphic writing or something like that. I'm not sure.
They're like little squiggles, and I've seen it. Mm-hmm. Oh, it is a word. I just Googled it. Tachygraphy. Stenography or shorthand, especially mm-hmm. that of ancient or medieval scribes.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So shorthand, and it's pretty cool. I started reading it just a little bit this morning and last night, and I'm like, oh, this, like, I can actually already start reading some of these sounds mm-hmm. a little bit, so it's cool. Anyways, if anyone is interested, it's called the Greg with two G's shorthand manual.
All right, you could win a one-of-a-kind diesel pin by leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts, which we beg for every episode. We can't get a review to save our lives.
Yeah, what's going on?
I don't know. It's okay. If you're listening, that's good enough. But if you're giving us a shout-out any other way, tag us on social media. We are on all the platforms.
We're also on Patreon.
We updated?
We'll be updated for sure.
I'm shifting the monkey.
Yeah. Is that one of the techniques? Ask the questions. Ask the hard questions. But anyways, yeah, we do have a Patreon. We do have Buy Me a Coffee. It might not be totally updated with all the secret stuff that's supposed to be in there. But if you want to support the show, it's a way to support the show. Yeah. For show notes and other episodes, you can check out diesel.org/67. And of course, you can listen to us at Voice Ed Canada. That's voiced.ca. And we are on Twitter. The show is at DieselPod. And again, we said we're trying to get that community going on there too. And so check and see if that's available. And I am at Brent G. Warner.
I'm Ishelle at ixy_pixie. That's ixy_pixy.
And in Latin, thank you is gratias vobis ago. So, gratias vobis ago for tuning into the Diesel Podcast.
See you later.
Whoa! Sound effects are going all over the place.
I couldn't hear any of that.
Dead.